Hey guys, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Got a question real quick before we get into the episode for the fellas. Hey fellas, do you like clothes? Yeah, you probably do. You like to wear cool clothes. Are you having trouble these days building your wardrobe? Yeah, can I be honest? I have, okay? I go on stage, I wear what's around, I like cool shit, but sometimes I don't know what cool is. And I got to tell you guys, there's a company called 5-4. Have you heard of them? Yeah, you probably have, because fucking Chris Paul, Derrick Rose, Blake Griffin, Aziz Ansari, Don Cheadle, Troy Polamalu, Zac Efron, Adam Ray, all sport 5-4 clothing. I like to look good. I know you do too. If you're a dude, you like to look good because looking good makes you feel good. Chicks like it. It helps your business, whatever you're doing. Look, I don't like taking time to shop, all right? I don't like going to the mall. You wander around aimlessly. You're like, do I want pants or shorts? I don't know what I'm doing here. 5-4 has it all, okay? Most dudes, once they find a brand, they lock in. They want to get what they get and get the fuck out. 5-4 came along, you know why? Because they wanted to help educate dudes on how to dress better, how to personalize your style, how to find exactly what you're looking for, you know, depending on what the situation is. So all you got to do is this. You go onto the website, you create a profile, whether you're looking for clothes for your office, the club, just a chill weekend with the boys, you're going out on a second date with a girl, and you don't know how you should dress to impress. 5-4 has you covered on every level. There's profiles that range from classic to casual to forward to mix. I wear 5-4 all the time, all right, because I love looking good. I like their style. I like their clothes. I like the personal touch you get to put on it. And especially on stage doing stand-up, I like to feel good and look presentable. You're selling your brand. They've got everything, too, that's great and in season. They've got shorts and button-ups, jackets and jeans when it's chillier. When you sign up to become a 5-4 Club member, here's what you get, all right? A simple, affordable way to expand your wardrobe. That's what they started, and that's what they do. The clothes are dope. You get a personalized member experience, all right? This is what a lot of other fashion lines don't offer, okay? Dependable how-to-wear style suggestions from dudes who look good and are killing it in the clothing game, man. When you look good, you feel good, you act good, you live good, you love good, you fuck good. All right? You also get curated collections selected by personal stylists, all right? You put in what you like, what you're feeling, what you're vibing out, your personal preferences, and they help you find what that is clothing-wise, all right? You also get free size exchanges. That doesn't happen with every business. And free delivery. Do you know how many fucking businesses slack because they don't do free delivery? You also get easy style profile edits. You want to go on your profile, make a change, do it free of charge. And you can only get all this if you sign up to be a 5-4 Club member. All right, so go to 5-4club.com, create a profile, okay, and use the promo code ALN when you sign up to get discounted off your first package, all right? Also, if you sign up this month, you get a free pair of Robert Geller shades. Do you know who Robert Geller is? Oh, I don't know. Just maybe named best new menswear designer in 2009. He's collaborated with Levi's, G-Shock, Yeezy, Season 1. Remember that? Well, if you sign up this month for 54club.com and use the promo code ALN, you're going to get a free pair of Robert Geller shades. What the fuck? Free dope shades. Usually priced at $200. You're going to get them for free when you sign up this month for 54club.com. Use the promo code ALN. I'm telling you, I did it. Brad just signed up for it and has already been rocking some of his fucking pants and shirts. And, you know, I got to be honest, he's upgraded. Brad was always a decent dresser to me. I was like, hey, bro, out with the Hot Topic shirts from back in the day. I know you used to work there. I know you got hooked up, but it's time to change your life. All right? Go to 54club.com right now. Put in promo code ALN. $60 a month, dude, and start living and feeling better, man. Start creating your profile, putting in your style, preferences and ideas, and then work with the team and start to get your wardrobe intact, man. Their suggestions are on point. They know clothes better than we do, all right? Most dudes are like, I know how to dress. I know it looks good. Yeah, you do to a point, man, but everybody needs a little help. Don Cheadle fucking wears these clothes. Don Cheadle! I don't know about you, but I model my life after Don Cheadle. 54club.com. Use promo code ALN and start looking doper. You see that? I'm already using cooler words. Dressed up in 5-4 and I'm already making up words like doper. And now, enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. What an episode today. I can't even tell you how pumped we are to release today's episode. It's a guy Brad and I both have looked up to since we started comedy, have gotten to perform with him on shows. He's one of the first headliners that I hosted for at the Irvine Improv when Amy Schumer was still featuring. She was middling for this guy. Brad's become buds with him, has done his comedy underground shows on Comedy Central and at the Comedy Store. He's a comics comic. He's a beast of a headliner. He's an amazing quick wit, a brilliant joke writer, and a guy that I don't know if I ever thought we'd have him on the podcast, and we did, and it was an amazing conversation. I'm talking about the one and only Dave Attell. That's right, baby. You might remember him from Insomniac on Comedy Central from back in the day, Dave's Old Porn on Showtime, the Comedy Underground, the Gong Show, countless TV appearances, Conan's, Letterman's, Ferguson's. Dave is an icon in the stand-up comedy world. Everybody who loves comedy includes Attell in their list of people that they that make them love to laugh. And you know, of course, Skanks for the Memories, that CD, and his HBO special, unbelievable. We went to the Comedy Store for this one, sat upstairs in the green room of the Belly Room, so it was really just dope to have such a authentic, real, and raw comedy conversation in such a historic place. Dave talked about all sorts of stuff, man, from his waiting tables days to going on the road with Mitch Hedberg, which some great stories there. Talks about my favorite, recently deceased Greg Giraldo. You know, how he got into stand-up in New York, his funny family. And talking about the current state of comedy from Dave was really enlightening and eye-opening to see from somebody who started when it was, you know, before cell phones and social media and Twitter and all that bullshit. And to hear his thoughts on, you know, how that contributes to the business and hurts it and helps it. It was really great. Just a great comedy conversation. If you love comedy, you like to laugh, definitely a lot of funny moments that we had in this one, because you can't help it for, you know. We got definitely real for a little bit and talked a lot of just real talk, but, you know, fun talk. Obviously, on this podcast, you guys know we never get too deep about anything, but it was just a great conversation, and I know you guys are going to love it as much as we did recording it. So follow Dave Attell on Twitter at @ATTELL, just at Attell. Hit him up on Twitter. Tell him how much you love the podcast. Of course, follow the podcast on Twitter at ALN Podcast. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. Go see Brad Williams this weekend in Cleveland, Ohio, guys. March 10th through March 13th. Brad will be at the Cleveland Improv in Cleveland, Ohio. Get your tickets at improv.com. And then, of course, March 17th, 18th, just March 17th and 18th, Brad will be in Columbia, Missouri at the Deja Vu Comedy Club in Columbia, Missouri. Go see Brad at Deja Vu. Get your tickets, I think, at dejavu.com. Deja Vu, that used to be a strip club in Seattle. It's one of the first ones I went to back in the day. Boy, you don't forget that shit. Walking in just so uncomfortable, but wanting to fit in so bad. Just walking in like, all right, yeah. Like making eye contact with bouncers and giving like the 80s shooters like, yeah, what up, man? And, yeah, no, I've been here before. Yeah, it smells good in here. What is that? What is that? A new kind of soap you guys are using to clean up after you rub your... Anyway, I'll just have a Sprite. I'm underage. You have to order drinks in those places. So uncomfortable. So sleazy, too. I've been a strip club in forever. I don't think I'm going to be in one again for probably quite some time. Unless I take, like, my kid there, or if I start getting involved in, like, a Big Brother program, I think I'd take a kid there. Why not, you know? Expand his horizons and, you know, his views of the world. Be like, hey, dude, this is also a job. This is also an option if I want to say if things don't go well, but some people choose stripping, I think, because they're like, look, I got a dope body. I can make quick, easy cash. I'm going to put my kid through college in 2 years instead of 17. Anyway, come see me. I got a lot of LA shows coming up. AdamRayTV.com for all my tour dates. Inglewood, Colorado. I'm going to be at the Gothic Theater with Michael Ian Black. Inglewood, California. That's in Denver, baby. About 15-20 away at the Gothic Theater on March 24th with Michael Ian Black. So come see me there. Oh, Irvine, California. I'm going to be there too, headlining the Irvine Improv on March 15th. That's a Tuesday at 8 p.m. Come see me there. Get your tickets at improv.com. And then, of course, La Jolla, San Diego. Come to the La Jolla Comedy Store April 1st and 2nd. Two shows both night. Get your tickets at comedystore.com in La Jolla, San Diego, California. And then I just added a few other dates. I'm going to be coming to the West Palm Beach Improv in West Palm Beach, Florida, baby. April 7th through the 10th. Get your tickets at improv.com. My first time there, man. West Palm Beach. Come out and see me. Florida, baby. Let's do it. And then, of course, end of April. April 28th through the 30th, I'm going to be in Boston, Massachusetts at Laugh Boston. Come out and see me there. Of course, bring your merch, you guys, when you're coming to the shows. Bring all your hats, your shirts, your Ronin the Quave shirts, your Life My Life shirts, the posters, all available at estoymerchandise.com, estoymerchandise.com. Get all your merch. Bring it. We'll sign it. Show your support for the pod, which we appreciate. Of course, other ways to show your support, by shooting us an email, okay? aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com. Send all of your emails, your fan stories, whether it's just a personal story about what the pod does for you, how much you love it, maybe a favorite pod moment, maybe a funny story with you in the pod, maybe who you've turned onto the pod, maybe your 80-year-old grandma or your 5-year-old nephew, some sort of fan story, shoot us an email with it. That we're going to start pulling our fan of the weeks from that email. So aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com. Send all your fan news, stories, whatever. Hashtag ALN podcast. And we're going to start plucking our fan of the week from those emails. All right. Keep tweeting at us. Keep giving us those 5-star ratings on the iTunes page. And comment on the iTunes page. All right. Those 5-star ratings in the comments help us climb the charts. So just type in About Last Night podcast on the iTunes page. 5-star rating, comment. Takes 2 seconds. Do it while you're listening to the rest of the intro before you get into the episode. Knock it out. Helps us climb the charts, like I said, you know, and we want to keep evolving and spreading the good word on the About Last Night podcast show. Thank you for those reviews. Keep on doing them. Tomorrow night, I forget to tell you guys this. Tomorrow night is finally the premiere of Separation Anxiety, my new TBS show. Really pumped. Had some premiere episodes, some preview episodes over the weekend that went really well. So pumped. TBS is pumped. But tomorrow night, it's finally the night. The premiere night, Separation Anxiety, TBS, the game show with myself and Eliza Schlesinger. So fun, so funny. You guys are going to dig it, man. New twist on a game show. It's edgy. It's cable. The couples are dope. The game is unique, and I hope it crushes. So check it out tomorrow. I think it's 9 p.m. on TBS, but check your local listings. Separation Anxiety, TBS, tomorrow night. All right? Thank you. And tweet at me afterwards, all right? Hit me up on Twitter, at Adam Ray Comedy. Tell me how much you dig the show. Send us emails, aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com. I want to hear guys' feedback, man. Tell me you love the show. If you didn't like the show, don't send me anything. I can't handle that negative feedback, all right? I'm sensitive. I just want to hear that you love it. You guys are going to love it. Now that we got the game show info out of the way, those are the tour dates. Those are the Twitter handles. That's all the merch info. That's all the fan of the week info. And now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only Dave Attell.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and a dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's About Last Night.
You were just asking Brad about the roast battle. You've judged it before, yeah?
Are we on now?
Yeah.
Not even an intro?
Well, intro, I mean,
what's the name
of
the podcast? How about that?
It's called the About Last Night podcast.
Oh, okay.
And if you want, we give you the cheesy intro of the and I'll go into like full radio voice.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say, you know, Brad, congratulations on the podcast, but is it better than regular radio? Because the last time I saw you, you were on regular radio.
Yes.
Your last day.
Yes.
That was a station in Seattle, right?
San Francisco.
San Francisco.
Yeah, over at Cobb's, you saw me. And I like the podcast better. It pays significantly less.
Well, that's a podcast polo. His radio morning polo.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, there's an upgrade in buttons. Yeah, you know, it's a little nicer.
You didn't button it all the way up when you were on the radio.
No, yeah. It's early. Yeah. We don't really.
Did you do the morning radio that he was on?
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. It's like I really don't like doing. You know, I've done so much radio, yeah. But I it's always more fun when there's another comic in there, and it's
like that's the worst day of someone's life. It's like I had the dream.
Yeah,
I could have had a midget my entire life.
Do you still enjoy doing morning radio at all, or is there?
I don't know. Of course, Stern is kind of the template of like the ultimate radio, but there's some great stations out there, and you know. I think you guys learned like how much work radio is. Like I give it up to you podcast guys because, you know, on regular radio, you got to do like, you know, the weather and the sports and the politics. And then also like, you know, there's going to be a buggy ride down at the bubba, you know, bring your sidearm, you know, like that.
Bring your sidearm. It's a sidearm hayride. Puddle of Mud is playing, everyone. Yeah. Puddle of Mud. Yeah.
But even the podcast, like, you know how hard it is to like just get guests and, you know, set it up and all that. So it's a lot of work. I mean,
it is, but I think it's, yeah, for sure it is. For us, it's been great for stand up, obviously, because it does help for getting people out in the seats. But yeah, I mean, it's more, I think just the longer, having the episode be longer too, there's just more content.
I was raised.
I'd like to share the first time I met you, which was at the Irvine Improv when I hosted for you, and Schumer was middling. Do you remember that?
Really? That was, I don't remember that specific one, but yes, Amy and I were on the road for a bit.
How?
I was just there recently.
So. Oh, nice. How do you like the new club versus the old one?
The new one is massive. Here's the thing about these gigantic clubs. It's like, I love the staff there. They're great. Like, I've known them for years. They're just awesome. And, you know, the town is pretty good. I mean, it is a little... you know, it's white, it's rich, it's all those things, but they still like to come out and drink and laugh. So they're my crowd, you know.
Yeah.
But I would say that once you get over 300 seats, you're in that weird area of like, you know, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, I think I need to up my game. And like, there's nothing worse than like a 600 seat comedy club half sold out. You're like, oh.
Right.
Man.
Because then like,
it's the saddest. And the waitress is in the back. You can see them. Glaring, just glaring at you.
Yeah, and then 300 people in any other room is like, great, it's sold out, it's a party. But then, yeah, if you have the 600 seats, you can't help but feel like you failed somehow.
And let's talk about it. The check spot, for those of you who know comedy, you know what the check spot is. For those of you who don't, it's when everybody has to pay the bill in the middle of the headliner's act, usually, about 15, 20 minutes in.
Right.
And in a 600-seat room, it's almost like... it looked like Comic-Con. People are getting up. They're like walking around. You know, they're talking.
People are having the arguments. I shouldn't have to pay full for the nachos. I had three nachos.
Yeah, and then, there you go.
Yeah,
it's like it's an endless, and then you have to kind of get them back.
I've literally put into my act like check drop jokes.
Oh, cool.
That are like long story jokes that don't have so many punchlines. Kind of like my act in general. Just not that many.
No, that's not true. I will say this. And you can back me up on it.
Yeah.
Brad is like a great comic, but also like you're a hard road comic, and I like that.
Yeah.
Like you're on the road a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of like, especially in LA, where you see a lot of comics. You know, they're kind of like in that mode where they're trying to get into the clubs and then maybe get on the road or on TV or you know, that kind of stuff. But like, he's been on the road like for years.
That's where he's built his career. For
Yeah.
Do you find like in places like Irvine, you mentioned it being like predominantly white. Did you when you first started playing there and picked up on that? Did you ever try to cater or like bring it like be even edgier just to like spite how maybe you thought they were going to be not on board? Or do you factor that in when you see a crowd that's maybe
I guess a good question. I know now everything has to have some kind of social relevance, but I go for the dick joke. I mean, I'm not above it. I'm a club comic, but
everybody loves him. I think at the end of the day, I did a corporate gig for people in their 60s and 70s, and they told me to not be filthy. And towards the end, I was doing crowd work with an old woman. We started talking about sex toys, and it ended up being the best part of the show. And then afterwards, the woman who ran it goes, "Why weren't you filthier?" I go, "Because somebody else told me not to be."
Yeah, it's hard when you're in a, like a situation like a corporate. That's why like corporate gigs, college gigs, you know, you're always like, I don't do them anymore. I'm too old. But for you guys, you gotta pay that rent.
You won't do college gigs anymore?
No way. No way. There's no way I want to face the eye-rolling, you know, app makers of tomorrow. That's what I look at them and I go, like, right now a guy's thinking of an app while I'm up here. You
the
know?
App makers of tomorrow.
It might save the world, but it's really not helping me.
Man. I mean, like, it was... That is such a more depressing thought than, like, children are our future. That's a little more... optimistic than like, the app makers of tomorrow.
No, I have I think that the crowd, like in terms of like my crowd, like I, when you talk about Irvine, like when I first played there, like the old club,
yeah,
it used to be a wilder crowd. It was like, you know, MMA guys and strippers and like just like beach guys, but not like soft beach guys, like hardcore, like
muscle,
you know, like a guy with a eye patch, you know, like you know, like who goes by like one name, you know, like
that's Sparky.
Yeah, Sparky created the wake, you know. And like that was cool, and I was like, these people are really cool. They were like way cooler than me, and I was like, this is great that I'm like, you know, performing.
Yeah.
Then it got more suburban, like any other gig. Now you kind of like, you know, they're all like, you know, everybody, you know, shows up and they're, you know, wearing some cargo pants and you know, they got a you know, a shirt on, and they just want to, you know, drink and eat, you know.
Now, yeah, you for a long time have been sort of the champion of the freak show in a way. Like you have the guys that like between your work on Insomniac and the Gong Show and things like that.
Right.
Like the like you say, the tattooed MMA guys, and then this like the strippers, the
That audience. Was a good crowd for a while. Yeah,
yeah. Like, is that an audience you set your sight to get, or just kind of like, I'm gonna be the king of the freak show?
No, I don't think I was ever really the king of it. I was definitely like, you know, I held my own with the drinking, and they were the drinking crowd. They were the bar crowd. But now, like, the bar crowd is more, I guess you could say metro, you know, it's like poetry slams and, you know, let's get out the Scrabble board, you know.
Was there ever a time during the heyday of like Insomniac when it was just when it was just like a room full of just strippers and meatheads and just like, I mean, collectively just a...
It was always the college guys that would come down and try and like, you know, challenge drink and like, you know, scream out stuff. That's why it's so funny that like when I look at everyone's acts now, like I, you know, the Comedy Store is really good because you see a lot of people in different levels of comedy, like starting out, and people have been doing it for a while. And then like, you know, you get the big names come in like Louis C.K. and Chris Rock were here working on the, I think that's amazing. And it's really good for the whole club and all that stuff. And, you know, you see that in New York too at the Comedy Cellar, but when you see these new comics, heckling is so different now. It's just like, you know, like the audience just will not engage. Like they'll just almost like emotionally turn off. Like you can almost feel them like powering down.
Yeah.
And like the comic will just be up there basically speaking to themselves. And in a way that's like this kind of like silent heckle, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's the groaning, of course.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, you are responsible for, in my career, the greatest heckle comeback I have ever heard.
For sure.
And that was at the aforementioned Irvine Improv. Some lady yelled something out to you just from the back, just that loud, like, yeah, I don't think you suck, Dave, or whatever the hell. Yeah. And you responded with, and I'm going to do a horrible Dave Attell impression to Dave Attell right now, but you responded with, all I heard was come, come, gurgle, gurgle, and the sound of a father crying.
We got through it.
That is a good one.
Yeah, like, but like you.
That's another one I should have put on a T-shirt. I mean, like, I am the worst at
merch.
My
mom would have bought six.
Yeah, see? You could tell them right in front. Like,
but like being sort of that, you're that late night kind of audience, is that something that just grew from your act naturally? Well,
where do you develop that quick wit to? Did it come from dealing with hecklers?
Yeah, I think I came up in comedy in a different time, like when there really was like kind of a knife fight, no holds barred kind of situation of like, especially in the New York open mic scene. Mm-hmm. And I think there were definitely rougher open mic scenes like Boston, which had like not only like super like hardcore professional hecklers, but also like the comics themselves were like characters, like a pirate ship of guys of this, like, you know, like getting paid and like, you know, coke and chowder. I don't even know what they were doing up there. Like,
so
those guys were intimidating.
Clark.
Yeah. Those things were very, those like, you know, like every town always had its like, you know, like the harder scene. And I don't know what to say. I mean, it's like, I'm really lucky that I came up before the phones and the and the web and all that kind of stuff, because I really do think that there's so much second guessing in comedy now because of like PC political correctness, and then also the next level of just self promotion.
It takes away from
the actual doing of it,
totally.
The fun of it, you know. And I think the audience himself, like, they also, like, you know, it's so hard for them to like just connect now when there's like their phone is right there and they really want to be on that phone. And you could just tell, like, after a show, like, when people like get to go out and turn their phone on again, if they were nice enough to turn it off,
right,
it's almost like this, like, it's almost like watching a clown take a shit. You know, it's almost like it's funny and it's sad and it's just like the worst.
And it gives you a boner.
Yeah, it does.
Absolutely.
But you know, I know I'm like the old like Sam Elliott of the group here, but I'm not the best comic, and I'm definitely like not the guy who's like, you know, comedy should be or anything like that. But I will just say one thing, that like it's only going to get more bland and just
you feel that
PC
way. Yeah.
As we go forward. And well, I'm kind of glad I'm at the end of it.
Yeah. Well, because it's like you say, like there's been times when I've been on stage and I'm talking about either a racial bit or a new bit, something that I don't, and then
or your
I
shoe
look
size.
Out and or my shoe size, and then I see a phone and I'm just like, because like
yeah.
someone has it up, and then it does make me kind of
yeah
hesitate for a second.
Oh, I always address it, and I yeah. feel like that's like, you know, just because.
But they want that too. They want you to confront them.
Of course.
So it makes it right. like almost like a dramatic moment yeah. on their little recording.
And people, don't you feel like too, when people, I mean, it happens in any heckler situation when, even if they're, especially when they're fucked up, and then if they get kicked out or at the end, they're just like, they always compliment themselves when they talk to you, like, you're
yeah.
welcome for being.
Yeah.
So even in the moment, it's like they subconsciously, what are that moment? And then so they can have that story to tell later on, like, the comics start talking to me and I made the show better. So it's a good thing.
No,
like,
no, you did it. No. And, have you,
guys, do you guys, when you play in town, do you see a difference between the L.A. crowd and then when you go on the road?
Yes.
What's the difference? Because I'm not here enough to really pick up on it.
Right. And this is just my opinion, but I love doing, like, the Midwest. I love going to the Des Moines Funny Bone and
right.
the Kansas City Improv and things like that, because I think people are more appreciative in L.A., they're planning the after party, the after party.
Right.
They're wondering.
Comedy's
now,
the first stop.
Yeah, it's like, well, while I'm here, what's happening to my social media presence?
Oh, I see.
And their minds are kind of elsewhere. They're not like, and that's not saying it's a coastal thing, because then you look at cities like San Francisco, New York, where I feel the audiences are more engaged.
Yeah, well, this is, you know, like where show business lives, so I give it up to the idea that, like, there's going to be a lot of agents and managers who swing in, and, you know, the good agent and manager will be the ones who do go to the clubs, and if you look at, like, you know, since everybody here is always like, how do I get a manager, how do I get an agent, it's really the ones that come to the clubs, or who did come to the clubs, are the ones who really get the comics, who really understand, you know, how a comic rocks a room, or, like, how they affect an audience, and those are the ones that, like, if you're looking for a manager, you want a manager that knows that. And, you know, I've been really lucky with my people. But I'll just say that the crowds here, you always feel like, am I, you know, you do crowd work with someone, you're like, is this guy going to be the next head of Sony Entertainment?
Yeah.
You don't know. I mean, right now, he
that
looks like
something.
He works at a Sonic Burger for 20 years.
And he might. And
Yeah.
I want to go back to real quick where you kind of just developed your – you said like fight or flight when you were in the open mic scene, and it was kind of like you developed a quick wit because of – out of necessity, yeah?
Because of kind of this. I just think that the crowds were not really receptive, so you had to keep moving forward and forward and forward. And I think a lot of guys will back me up on that from New York, especially, that like there was a lot of you know, the showcase thing is a great thing, but you know, there's showcases like where, you know, it sucks all the way through, and like the host is not really helping out, or the crowd just stinks, and he's kind of like the captain of a sinking ship, and you're like one of the, you know, the mates on the boat. And then there's the ones where it's like, you know, up and down, like where you can tell the crowd is like, they really like that guy, but you see what that guy's doing. He's doing his best 20 minutes from the road, and like you're trying out new material, and now you're going to fall. So there was a lot of variables that were good that kept you thinking, kept you on your toes. It wasn't like you could just go up there with like, you know, not to say it like a magician, you know, here's my three tricks,
right,
I'm going to hypnotize somebody. I mean, like, you always had to kind of move and bounce.
Were you that way in, like, elementary school and, like, high school? Like, did you always kind of, like, verbal assassin?
No, I actually like to think of, you know, comedy was definitely a plan B for me. Like, as a kid, I never thought I was going to do it. And I still don't think that, like, you know, I'm the best fit for it, because now the way I see all entertainment is, like, you really got to want to be something famous.
Yeah.
You gotta, just being good at something is not really success in this business.
And, no.
I would say that, like, I come from a family of Jewish retail people, so they would probably be more exciting. They would probably, my parents, you know, are, well, my dad passed away, but my mom is very, you know, cool with what I do. My dad was cool with it. But, like, they would have been just as cool with me if I, like, was the manager of, like, a Modell Sporting Goods or, you know.
Well,
like
I mean, Modell Sporting Goods is pretty
strong. Yeah, I know. It is a bit of a store. a star. Can we curse on this?
Yeah,
you have a star fuck over there. Sure. But you know, I'll tell you, like you guys, like have a lot of. I really feel for this next wave of comics, man. I really do.
Yeah, that and it's like because before. It was just when you were doing comedy, all you could do was stand up. Just like, hey, just do stand up. That's what you do. Now it's like, okay, well, you could do stand up, but you also have to have a presence on Vine and YouTube, and you got to be funny on Twitter, and you got to be funny with Instagram and Snapchat, and like all these things, and you got
to
be.
And then, but is that a good audience? I just want to know: is that the audience that really is going to come to your show?
I don't know.
I don't think so
because they're so used to getting your content.
And if they come, they're
going to
come because of your Instagram like quick videos. So then they see a full hour in there.
Yeah. My core audience is now guys who watch me on Insomniac and now have grown up. And then their wives who really have no idea what's going on. And then the occasional cool swinger couple that show up who are also like me, a broken toy, who life has not been that great. And they see the humor in it. Like, if you do like a joke now, like especially like a sex joke, and like you hear like one guy laughing, you know, it's like it's usually some old guy, like, you know.
Right, who's lived it, who's experienced it.
He's on his third marriage, you know.
Right.
He knows what's going on. The young kids are like looking at each other, especially the guys looking at their girl to see they're allowed to laugh.
Right? What,
what's the age range of fan you've had come up to you? Like, have you had like somebody in their 80s and then a kid who's like 19 come up and been like,
Well, anybody below 25, I assume, wants to be a comic. So anybody above 25, I assume, wants to, you know, be a director.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't think any, I think, like I said, my crowd is getting a little older, but they're still hanging in. And then there's like, you know, there are some really hardcore comedy fans. And that's the one thing with these podcasts that is so cool is that, like, you know, after the show, like you've been with me, we take pictures. We talk to the fans. Like, not every comic does that, and they shouldn't have to do that.
No.
But the cool thing is that they should connect somehow to these core people.
You have to do something.
People that don't just like you. They like a whole bunch of comics. Like, I always ask them, I go, do you know Doug Stanhope, who is my favorite comic? And they go, oh, yeah, I love Doug. And then I'm like, oh, they're a comedy fan. And they know comedy.
I can hang with you. I can talk with you.
Like even if they like mention like comedy, like I couldn't care if they mentioned like a Christian comedy or, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Anything like a cruise ship. It's just as long as they know other comics, I'm like, that's great.
Yeah. You
know? It's like cool that they're not just like, oh, I'm a one comic guy. That's
sucks. Is it because like, for instance, when people go out to see like Doug Benson, like, everyone wants to smoke a joint with Doug Benson.
Yes.
Have you noticed that with your crowd, like, everyone wants their, like,
years
Dave,
ago they
want to
drink with
tell
me.
Story.
Drink with me. But the picture now is, like, people are more excited about a picture than they are with the actual performance, which kind of sucks. But I get it. I get it that, like, no one's going to ever believe them that they came to a show.
That's what it is.
No one's ever going to believe them that they went to the Irvine Improv.
Right. They need that photographic proof. Like,
these people with the horrible friends don't believe
it. I got a Dave Attell pube. You weren't there. Look at my phone.
The Doug Benson thing, though, like, talk about like a fanatical following. I mean, that's great. He's like Nostradamus, man. He was way ahead of his time, man.
Yeah.
It's like every day there's more, you know, people. I was in Portland and it's like legalized pot, and like I tried to do jokes on it, but in my heart I'm not really a pot guy, so in a way, like, I look at it like a, you know, like a dad, like, that's interesting.
That's interesting what those kids are doing nowadays.
I like how they try and, like, you know, adult up pot a little bit, you know, like a dispensary and all that kind of stuff, and like
make it classy.
Here's a gift bag of some edibles and all that stuff. And I'm like, get out your guitar. Let me hear what you have to say.
Is that how you approach something like that? If you have to have somewhat of a interest and emotional connection to it to even
not
like,
at all. I think everything. I'm sorry to shut you down.
No, please.
But I think that's the whole thing now, where everything has to have like some passionate inner, you know, whatever. I think that, like, you know, you should be able to, like, you know, I want to do a joke about owls. So, like, I'm thinking about jokes about owls. You know, I want to do a joke about, you know, whatever, hummus. So I'll think about a joke about that. And,
I mean,
you know,
just hit two of the hackiest topics ever. Hummus and owls.
No. It's like, I like how Seinfeld and, like, the classic joke writers, they, like, talk about, you know, pretty much, you know, everyday things.
Yeah.
And the great clean joke writers, like guys who are just awesome, like a Brian Regan or Nick Griffin, who did a million great Letterman spots.
Yeah,
and it's really hard to do a spot to begin with on television, but to, like, consistently hit like that is really, like, I'm impressed with that. So, like, the dirty, like, everybody loves a dirty joke, but it's really hard to write a really strong, clean joke.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really what, like, you know, when I hear one of them, I'm like, oh, man, that is, I wish I thought that up.
But I think on the flip side, it's also tough to write a really good, like, smart, dirty joke, don't you think?
That's not just going up there and saying, filthy words.
Yeah, like the way you kind of have with your misdirection and some, like, I don't see so many of your punchlines coming in that, and it really, you know, is.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, thanks. That's, I take that as a compliment, especially for guys who, like, you know, we've all seen, like, just guy shock humor and all that kind of stuff, but I always feel like, you know, if it's going to be a dirty joke, it could be the best dirty joke.
Totally. I always feel like there's substance when you joke, so I never feel like you're saying something.
You know, you bring up, like, Amy, like, you know, when we talk with Amy.
Yeah.
Like, Amy is also, like, a great joke writer. Right. So, like, we would, you know, it was really good to have, like, two perspectives on one show. And, like, she's a better comic than me now, like, hands down. But I'm just saying, like, the you know, women now are, like, you know, incredibly cool with the sex stuff, and, like, you know, thank goodness they're allowed to talk about it. Yeah. You know, we don't live in the 50s, and they're allowed to. And, like, there's some awesome stuff coming out.
Yeah,
there's some awesome, great material coming out on their side, and that's cool too. And, like, for the guy now, it's a little bit. It's a little bit more difficult to do the you know, pussy and dick material, but still, like, the best joke always wins. And you know, I just think that let's just hope that, like, the crowd won't, like, just turn off completely on that, where it turns into, like, a TED convention. You know, we're standing up there, you know.
Yeah, so we're
talking
just
about
up there
dreams and hopes, and, you know.
Oh, dreams God. And hopes,
please,
no.
Never.
I mean, and this is coming from the guy who still owns the record for the longest dick joke in history from...
Is it me?
Well, the end of your HBO special.
Captain Miserable is the longest shit joke.
Oh, longest shit joke.
But I don't think it is the longest shit joke. I'm sure someone is, of course, stopped me. But I thought everybody would be like, how fun. They were like, okay. Like nobody. That's another thing in, like, television and whatever. Like, the sense of humor really kind of sometimes stops with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool when you meet other people, like producers and whatever, directors. Like, my editor is awesome. He is great. He helped me edit my last thing, Roadwork. That guy is
which
a great
is available
subject,
on
Jeremy.
Netflix now, by the way.
So good, by the way.
So such an awesome special.
And when you find people like that, like Scott Gallick, who was my
who's your
director.
Cameraman?
Yeah.
Right?
And he's done the comedy. He's done, like, a lot of comedy stuff for me. He also has a great eye for comedy.
Yeah.
So when you find people like that, you really want to work with them. And you go, like, hey, this guy really knows it. And they see it.
And with your special Roadwork, you had a cameraman. You had two camera angles that I've never seen before, where one, you had a guy literally on stage with you, Scott, right?
Right.
Yeah, and that
that was hard, by the way. That was really hard.
Sure, because you had to do shots, and he couldn't be in, like, every shot.
Yeah, but he also was right there, so for the audience to even focus on me.
Right. It's a constant distraction, almost.
Yeah, it's almost like having your mom holding a plate of, you know, Rice Krispie treats. And, like, you know, you're walking around just talking in your underwear, you know, so.
I think you just came up with $1 million idea right there.
I'm sure that already.
How did you pick all those locations for the Roadwork?
We just wanted regular clubs that had different looks, and we looked at a bunch. And, you know, the whole idea was to, like, hit different regions in the country. And, you know, we shot maybe two extra ones that, like, I think we didn't have our game together yet, but it was no slam on the club. And to be honest, like, I knew it would look different. I wanted it to look different from the regular theater hours. And, you know, that's just because, like, I never was really a theater comic. Like, I've done some theater tours. Like, the one tour that I think, you know, the real hardcore fan always brings up is the one with me, Lewis Black, and Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah.
And that was,
yeah,
like, a great theater tour. And I think that was, like, one of my first theater tours. And it was, like, a really cool experience. I mean, it was very dramatic, you know, with all those different kind of characters on the show.
How long were you guys on the road doing that?
I think we did about 12 to 15 cities. And, you know, Lewis, who was, like, master. And Mitch, you know, it's really a shame that he didn't. You know, I was actually talking to, you know, a mutual friend, and I was like, you know, not only is Mitch kind of like the template of what, you know, comedy is today, which is, like, more esoteric and, like, not so punchline driven, but yet great punchlines, you know, like, he would be rocking out. Like, he would be like an arena act.
He would.
And he really
right
was
he
like a
be.
Theater act, which, when you think about it, like, even though he started out in the same barroom clubs the rest of us did, like, in the theater, he really could hold it, just like his presence, you know? And his crowd was also fanatical, and I think they are to this day. That's really cool.
People took to him immediately, didn't they?
Yeah. I think that, like, he definitely was so different, and he connected with a group that I think regular comedy didn't even know about yet, because nobody really knew about these people. Like, you know, it's like a jam band. You look out, they're all wearing, you know, the, like, you know, ostrich hats, and, you know, there's, like, you know, people weaving. I mean, like, he had, like, this cool crowd that nobody really knew was out there, you know?
I love how you've always had an eye for comics who have been coming up, whether it be the Insomniac tour when you had a young Dane Cook, a young Greg Giraldo.
Oh, well, that was Dane's show as much as it was mine.
You think so?
Yeah, no, because I think Dane and I, we both had a deal, and they were like, hey, let's save some money and have them both on the thing.
Combined,
and
yeah.
Dane was at the height of his, man, he really rocked that show. He really did. I'll say to this
day. That
was
an unbelievable special.
He really, House of Blues, like, in Vegas. We were in the way, if you will. It's like, wow. He really just blew it out. He killed. And
he was the only one that didn't drink at that time, yeah? Did you still drink at that time?
I'm not sure, but he definitely was like, you know, I looked out at the crowd. I'm like, look at all these hot chicks here. Oh, that's Dane. You know, that's just like,
that's,
you know, my crowd never looked like that. And I'm like, that's amazing. And then Greg Giraldo was on that too. And Greg also was another guy who like.
You and Greg are, I mean, two of my favorites.
I think Greg is like definitely one of the most underrated, like, especially everybody knows him from the roast, but underrated, like, political joke. Comic, just really great take on different things.
He's the one who made me start to at least open my mind to the way he would like look at just regular news stories and find like the one about, you know, the woman or the guy jumping off the cruise ship, you know, and he's like, and that story sounds crazy to anyone who's never been married, you know, and then about how like the fight on the Lido deck and like, you know, we got eye sculpting, whatever, but like he would just take these the guy who got struck by lightning twice and then got married and killed himself, and he's like, God himself couldn't do it. We had to bring in the experts. But he like took these real stories aside from all the political and topical stuff, and it was
you're right, like he really could take like what's happening right now and like find the edge and the funny to it. And I think that was really like what, it's so sad because like he was a great comic, but he really would have been like a household name outside of the roast.
I think so. If he had where,
you
did
know,
you meet him in New York?
Like Greg is more on the same, started the same time as Jim Gaffigan, who was like another guy who's like, you know, some of Jim's stuff is just dead on point, like so funny. And like, you know, everybody doesn't give like the clean comics credit enough for like some of these slamming jokes. And they really are.
Going to a Gaffigan show, if there's any sort of stat that comics could have, it would be like laughs per minute or something.
Right.
And Jim's would be the highest.
I agree.
It's nuts. He's just got a ton of every line.
And he does, you know, I can't bang out material like these guys. Like, it takes me like years to like come up with like another hour of stuff, and I'm always second guessing it and like hating it. And by the time you're ready to do the joke, then like something in the news happened, so you can't do it.
Right.
And that was like the I remember originally like back with the Captain. With the Skanks for the Memories. Like I had the joke about can't they tell they're terrorists when they're calling up for their get their ticket, you know, what's your name?
Right.
Jay, as in jihad. Oh, yeah. Like, and I've seen that in cartoons now and all that stuff. But I remember, like, there was, like, definitely some kind of hijacking or something that happened. I was like, we better get that off the CD.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Just because that, one family is going to write a letter?
Well, no, actually now with the outrage, you know, web outrage, so.
Well, it's because before Twitter and before Facebook, if you got mad about something, if something really offended, you had to go really out of your way to show your outrage. You had to go to the studio, protest outside. You had to write letters longhand. Now you got 145 characters on Twitter just to say, I was offended, send. And it's so quick that you don't have to think about it. You don't have to contemplate it. You don't have to think, is this worth my time? Because you can just get it out like without even having to take a second guess. That really annoys me when people get that fake outrage. Of just like, this isn't keeping you up at night.
Well,
this
you know what's cool about like clubs like the Comedy Cellar and the Comedy Store and the Improv and stuff? They never really like give you a note on content. And like, have you ever like, they go like, don't do that. Like, there are some rogue clubs we all know that like we want to clean.
Right.
Or we want to, you know, like whatever. Clean,
don't do so
clean.
Much racial material here.
Right. Don't do that kind of a joke.
Right.
Like, when you do a college, they say, don't talk about this and that. And like, you know, that just as a comic makes you want to do that joke.
Absolutely.
And it always makes you want to like go there. But it also really shows that the club themselves like want to control something that's almost like, you know, like it's uncontrollable. Like,
yeah.
You know, you're supposed to let the comics kind of grow and like, you know, find and fail and get up and fail again.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the thing about when someone makes a joke about whatever taboo topic, whether it be like rape or abortion or whatever, it's like people are like, whoa, that's never funny. It's like, yeah, it can be. It's hard to make a joke about that topic funny, but you have to be allowed to try.
Right.
I mean, sure, if it fails, oh well, try again. But
I agree. Yeah. I agree that like the comic should be allowed to fail, and that's really what it is. It's like you're allowed to fail. It's like succeeding is on you, but the club will always go like, you know, you do what you do.
Yeah.
We told the people it's an adult show. That, you know, it's going to be, you know, like, I guess you could say triple R rated or X rated content.
Right.
And if you are offended, then it really is on you because you've been warned now.
Yeah.
Some people make up their minds before they come in, too. They just kind of like...
Well, I think people have a bad idea of what they think they are. They go like, no, I'm cool. You know, I've you know, listened to some kind of, you know, like practical joke.
Yeah.
I've watched some skateboard video, you know, joke.
I've seen Benny Hill. I know what's
And then
what's
they
hip.
Go in and they hear all this filth and they're like, what is that? I'm so outraged.
Yeah. I can recite Charles in Charge episodes. I know what comedy is.
No, you can definitely see it in their eyes. They're like, you know, whoa, I didn't. Whoa. It's like, well, you know. Honestly, you should have done something else.
Right. Yeah. There, I did a gig last week, and it was I asked the audience, like, I did that thing where I was like, this is the early show. I won't go so dirty. And of course, the audience just yells out, go dirty, go dirty.
Yeah, they do.
And then I was like, all right, cool. And then I did the dirty joke. And then this woman who literally yelled out, go dirty, pumping her fist, then yelled back, too far.
Like, I love that. You have that on tape. That's great.
did Comedy Central, do they come down on Insomniac? Or do they kind of go, yo, this is kind of breaking ground, so do whatever you're going to do?
No, I think that show was filled a need for them, which was like a travel show, and it was really cheap. Mm-hmm. And that it was refillable. Like, you know, the fact that, like, we could bring it to different towns. And, you know, by the way, like, you know, people just go like, what do you think of these other shows? I go, wow, I wish we had their travel agent, because it took us like an arm and a leg to get money to go to New Orleans or Brazil, which now, like, my niece is going to South Africa on like a, you know, eco safari global warming expedition. Jesus. And it's like, you know,
people travel. Insomniac in Columbus, Ohio.
Well, it was always the small town to get it off of the, you know, the E channel of beaches and paradise and, like, you know, resorts and, you know, like great islands, you know, drinking and things.
Yeah,
so it was like the ugly man's E. Yeah. That's what I used to call it. And now there's a lot of shows where they travel like that. But we really, you know, to give it up to the producers, they really did make the most of what we had. And I'm not the best host, but I did have like an idea of what we should do.
No, but your personableness, if that's the word, with everybody. And I'm curious, like, were you like that before? Did the show make you more?
Did
you say about connecting with your fans, how, you know,
I don't find show business particularly interesting or the people in it.
Yeah.
But like regular people, especially the third shift guy jobs, you know, like those guys, really, I was really interested in that. And, you know, I'm bar guy. So, like, you know, I know how to talk bar talk, but the other stuff was like, I really was supposed to be like the, you know, the traveler guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be honest, I would say that, like, it's harder than it looks, but it is also like, it's kind of cool if you're like it really keeps you on your feet, moving fast, thinking, and, like, you know, going like, oh, I wish I made fun of that guy's shirt, but there'll be another guy with a shirt, so I'll say it next time. Oh, it doesn't work this time. So it was really good for like my comedy kind of crowd work skills, like that I had developed in clubs. It really kind of like helped me like bring it on the street, you know?
Yeah, having to be just so present in the moment with every sort of interaction.
And like the looking to the camera, talking to the camera, that was definitely something that we decided, because it was like, otherwise I'm talking to myself. And I said, can I talk to the camera and make the cameraman part of it? And I think everyone agreed, and then the network agreed. So then it was like, that became like the idea of how it went.
I like how you kind of translated that when you did the Roadwork special, because then the camera on stage, you could talk to the camera. That was kind of like, you would like kind of make asides to it, like, oh, they didn't like, you know.
I love Scott being there, because I hate these specials where they have like a guy, you know. And by the way, there's some really great theater specials, and I'm going to say it right now, Jay Oakerson's theater special, he just shot it for Comedy Central.
Yeah,
it's going to be awesome. It looks
the
great.
Set looked incredible.
Yeah, you saw it, right? Yeah, and it's like metal. It's his fans, and like that should be a really good one, because Comedy Central, you know, like the After 12 special, like they really have to, like, you know, make sure that you can still do a dirty, hard late night special there. And it's not all just like retreads or like, you know, like, you know, here comes another, you know,
Jeff Dunham special,
you know, at midnight marathon or something. So it should be like, if that's when the dirty special should be, then they should let them roll hard. And it would be great if they could play them more, but I understand why they can't. But like back in the day, you know, you talk about like when Dane was there and all that stuff. It's like they would keep playing specials continuously, and it really helped us on the road.
Sure.
Now these kids, like, you know, when you get like four spots, and that's, you know, that's it, unless it's like a mega hit.
But in terms of doing dirty late night specials, that's one of the things I loved about the show, and especially being on it, was the Comedy Underground show. Is that when you were hosting that? Is that really allowed comics to be themselves?
Yeah.
In a late night setting, and
they were cool to want to do that, but there was a lot of technical problems. It became a lot of work. But the idea of it was sound, and also the fact that, like, you know, like it was for me, it was like it should have. It was really cool to get to bring up guys who had never been on TV. Guys,
yeah, you had, like, you broke like Pete Davidson, like he was
not, well.
16,
come on, Pete
17?
Was going to make it anyhow.
He was, but like,
but like a lot of the people, like Nikki was on there, but I think she had done stuff before that. But she has her own show, and like, there's so many good. And if it kept going, then we could have brought more in. But I was like, you know, I was like, I don't want really like the storyteller comics, because I feel like that's more of a West Coast meltdown thing,
right,
where they were doing that really well.
Yep.
So I was like, I want the hard, you know, like especially that edge comic.
Right.
You know, the one who does like the punchline, you know, like set a punchline, that kind of thing. Cause that's like, really works well, like in a New York club. So I wanted to get that group in. And those, you know, like we could have done like 10 seasons of that. So,
easy. And,
you know,
one thing I loved about it.
And
is,
I didn't even have to be the host. I even told them that. I go, like, it's just a great idea. You should keep doing it. And,
yeah.
Like,
just
I totally understand. Like, down the road, they probably will do, like, another version of that, too.
When you're picking the comics for that show, is it just, I mean, all these people that you knew, obviously, right? Yeah?
Well, the ones that I had seen. But the network also weighed in on it. And they also, like, you know, Comedy Central, they know comics. They do. They go out, they watch them, they get the tape. They do their homework. So.
When you're watching stand-up just in general at the clubs, I don't know how much you stick around after, before your sets, but, like, when you see a comic and like, what has to happen in order for you to go, oh, cool, that's somebody that I think might have something to them at some point.
Well, I have to have a show. Otherwise, that's someone I could share an Uber cab with. No, I don't. I mean, no, I just, like I said, it's, you know, like, performance is cool, and I know why performance rocks. You know, like, if you're a good performer, you know, like, the audience is right there with you.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like, I know how hard it is to write a joke, so I just, like, love jokes. So
yeah,
if I hear a guy or a lady say a great joke, I'm like, you know, hey.
Have you heard people in your just regular life who aren't comics say really funny shit? That
yes. Like, yeah. Yeah, I have heard that, and they usually end up becoming comics.
Oh, yeah.
No, but you're right. Like, there are people. Like, what do you do in those situations?
I don't know. I mean, like, I used to work at a grocery store in high school, and the guy who was my boss was just this, like, 70-year-old pervert man who used to always call out, like, tits to me and, like, get mad at me when I wouldn't, like... Like, when he'd be like, look at the delicious fun bags on that. Like, and he'd use, like, old jargon like that. And the women would be, like, very close, but he, like, thought he was old and he could get away with it. And he was, like, this, like, beloved manager of the grocery store. And I was just
delicious fun bags?
Yeah, and I was,
like, he was saying.
And I was 17 years old, and so I was like, I don't want to go along with your pervy thoughts. Yeah. And then he would get mad at me, but then he would every now and then have, like, unintentionally, like, say funny things. And I was always like, I wonder if he... You know, at that point, I didn't know, but I thought, like, well, maybe he could be a comedy writer, because he would say this shit and not just the way he would deliver certain lines. But
I totally get it, because I used to have straight jobs, you know, like work.
What'd you do?
I worked at the door at the Improv in New York City, like the original Improv there. And,
no kidding.
I also, you know, like, worked at the Discovery Channel and their research. I was a temp. I, you know, waiter. I did all those jobs that you do before, you know, you get the money. And
I can't see you as a waiter.
The funny thing is, like, I'm from Long Island, so, like, whenever I go back there and do shows, I immediately snap into, like, my Long Island humor of, like, you know, they're, like, they're really sarcastic. They, like, are really, you know, dry and rough. And you know, I'm glad that I did regular things, because I think now a lot of people start out, like, at 15 and go, I'm a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
And they, like, never really have done a straight job, you know?
You have to, right? You have to live a little bit.
I don't know. You really don't know anymore, you know? It's like, that's cool that they have that kind of focus and, like, vision, but it really is, like, all the shitty, you know, jobs that I've had.
What did you pull from the waiter job that you...
I was a horrible waiter, and I was at one of those, like... One of those, like, seafood high-end, like a Wolf of Wall Street kind of places.
Bubba Gump place.
I could have probably made, like, key money, but I wasn't that good, you know?
Yeah, some girl complains about her lobster bisque, and you come back with, all I heard was come.
Let me put a bib on that, you. can I just stop the whole podcast for one second?
Yeah, sure.
here we are at the Comedy Store in one of the other many rooms of this, you know, fun house of humor. What do you think this room was used for? It's very narrow. There's several couches in it.
Great question.
What was this for?
Cocaine.
Well, yeah, I assume the whole club was powder, powder fest.
There's a couple of mirrored tables here, so I can only imagine.
I want to just assume, still, because I feel like not much has been refurbished in this place. Maybe some carpets, maybe a couple chairs. That chair was probably...
So you really think this was like a performance room? I doubt it.
No. I mean, I feel like a green room, though. I feel like this still served what it was, but maybe...
Although, right now, we're in a room where it looks like the rejects from... Carrot Top's joke.
Yeah, there's a lot of props in here.
It's like a C-3PO mask and a
it
weird
is like
lightsaber.
Breaking Case of Gallagher. We have props on. We have props on. But anyway, yeah
it's so, I don't know. You've been here.
I never really played this club until like maybe 10 years ago.
Okay.
10 or, 12 years ago.
So you just heard stories.
I never
about
started
them.
In LA. Yeah. So like I would come out here and I would play, the improv mostly, and then here, they would always throw me on. They were always cool to me. And I am just loving how much this club is rocking.
It's killing
this one
it.
And the improv. And the audiences are coming because like the roast battle and all these great comics dropping by, and that's cool, that's
you guys are stacking
good.
The lineups now, man. I think the shift.
I know, huh? It's like welcome to being bumped. I know. I'm always getting bumped all the time, but I kind of like hate bumping anybody.
No way.
What are you talking about? I can give you a list of like 100 acts that would bump me.
Like recently?
I could get bumped. Honestly, like
at the Cellar?
Totally. But it's never a bad thing when you.
But you're
nice
enough to step aside. That must be it.
No. I get bumped all the time. But like, it's always a good thing because usually, like, if Louis goes on and works on stuff or Chris Rock, the crowd has been brought up another level, and then you're kind of like riding their wave. And
it's
really
good. Oh, so you still get to go on? Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Really
oh, yeah.
Good.
That's awesome.
Have but you always?
Like,
yeah.
But the I guess that's just part of the scene. That's how it works for everybody.
How was coming out to L.A. when you would when you were just a New York guy and you would come out here? You said before you really got integrated. In the scene.
I was uglier and fatter and broke and this town is not very kind to the when I first came out here being a bald ugly fat pudgy Jewish kid every manager
everyone thought you were a producer.
They were like, we gotta get you on a writing thing, like you're a writer. Now you come out, you look around, like if you want to see the star of a show, look for the actor, look for the ugliest guy in the room, he is the star. And then like the good looking guys are all the writers. That's how it flipped now. It's like it definitely is like more normal life
now. Did you think when you were writing on
I like it the other way around though.
Yeah, like when you were writing on Saturday Night Live, did you think like that you were going to be a writer then at that point?
No, I knew I wasn't. I knew like week 2 that it's not going to work out for me.
What?
I didn't want to do it. I wanted to be a comic.
Yeah.
I was like just on the verge of becoming like a good road comic, and then this happened, and it was like this amazing thing, and like I wasn't really a performer there, and I wasn't really a writer. I was like an in-between person.
Yeah.
And like, I could tell right away how competitive and how like this was everyone's dream but mine. So like I really tried to be like, I'm going to work on it and do it. But I never really got the idea of like what I was supposed to do there other than like write sketches for the host that comes in and help propel jokes into these like long running characters that they've had. They're like
right.
You don't know the weed man? Oh god. You gotta get him a weed joke.
Cause you were there for a year, right?
Adam Sandler, actually who I went to college with, NYU, was cool to me. And I shared an office with Jay Moore, and Jay is also like a buddy of mine to this day. So
that's two comics in the same office. So
no, Adam was a star already by then.
But you and Jay.
Me and Jay,
yeah.
Jay also was like Jay was like balls to the wall. He was great. And honestly, like, I know he wrote a book about it there, but he definitely would not. I do think that like for him, it was a different experience because I was only there for the year. He was there for several that like, I could see how like those, anyway, Jay is so funny and so, like a show like that should like love to have a Jay.
No shit, Jay Moore, man. He's so quick and
he's
so
good. His characters and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But sometimes over there, I guess the politics and just like the clicks,
it's a big part of it.
Kind of like SERP. But that was 20 years ago.
Did you try it when you became buds with Adam? And you were on the show? Did you try to?
I knew him in college. So
yeah.
What
did
I?
What? Did you guys room together in college or no?
No, no.
How'd you
meet? Don't make more of it than what it is. I'm in college.
How long were you guys dating for?
No, I actually one of the first road gigs I did was with him in Queens, and like I tanked a horrible death, and he did great, and we were on a dance floor in a ballroom. So there you go. So there's your story. But I didn't. To be honest, he had already been there, and like. you know, Pete, like, I see Pete Davidson and these guys, and they're all cool guys. And, like, I'm like, you know, the cool thing about them is that they go out and do comedy as well. It's like, I was always like, they would look at me like when I would sneak out to go do stand up, like downtown. They'd be like, where are you going? Because I remember one of the writers, and this is, I've said this before, he goes, why, where are you going to go? I'm going to go out and do a set. And he goes, you're on SNL. You don't have to do that anymore.
Wow. I'm like, wow. But
I'm like,
I like
I'm like,
that.
This is what I really do. And then the elevator shut on my career.
Pete was telling me. Had you written sketches before that?
No, I had no idea.
Just got thrust into it.
Yeah.
And
that was really not fair for the show there. But I know for everybody, it's their dream of being over there. It just wasn't my dream. So I wanted to be Bill Hicks. I wanted to be like on the road, like, you know, throwing it down, doing that kind of thing. And, you know, this came along. And so you're like, hey, you got to go for it. And they like me. So you figure it's going to be easy. And it wasn't. And, you know, to be honest, it's like once you like start writing for yourself, it's really hard to write for anybody else.
I was going
to
say,
Well, yeah, because you figured out your voice.
Yeah, like I was almost like a year away from like knowing what I could do on stage, and I was like almost right there, you know. It was
But then you go from that experience to a show like Dave's Old Porn, where it's like that.
Well, actually, I'm going to stop you because right after that, after I was not picked up, or I guess you could say not asked back to the show, I was like, boo hoo, you know. But Jon Stewart, who I also started in the clubs with, he had a show, and then I went on to his show, and we had a great time.
Yeah,
and like it was the total opposite, where like anything, you know, we tried, it didn't work out. This was like one of his earlier variety shows, but it was great. We tried all these different things, and he was such a good host. He really is a great host.
Yeah.
And then, you know, years later when he did the Daily Show, he let me do some stuff on that. So, you know, honestly, like there's so many cool people in comedy, and like if you're a stand-up and you start with stand-ups, that like even if you make it to the top, you always want to be around stand-ups for some reason, because it's just like, it's just more fun.
It's a common bond, and it's like the only people that can truly understand what it's like to get on a plane to go play
and
Dayton, Ohio.
Why do you think shows like The Daily Show run as well as they do? And like,
because of Jon Stewart, that's why. The network believed in Jon, and Jon took that show and really brought it to like the ultimate level of where it became almost like beyond satirical news to like a social relevance. And you guys are younger than me. You grew up with it. You understand it. It probably taught you all like, you know, like the funny of news and like what news does and doesn't do.
Oh yeah.
So I think that like he really like let the people, and he also has an amazing eye for people. Like look at Carell and all those people that were there. They're great.
Yeah.
I mean, like they were not comics. They were improv people, or they were actors, and you know, he just like saw that, and he you know, he let them roll with it too. And you know, he really is like, you know what, like if you look at all the hosts that have ever been, he definitely is like a unique character. And like,
well, because he was so knowledgeable too about political issues.
He really is super intelligent.
He knew like the deep stuff. So some senator could come on the show that thought he would be lobbed softball questions, and Jon would know like how he voted on certain things and what it meant, and what lobbyists were in his back pocket. Like he would know things like that your average, like, no slack against Jay Leno, but Jay would never be like, unions, they were really paying you a bunch of money. And like, well, they wouldn't do that.
It's a different thing.
It's a horrible Jay Leno, by the way. Sorry.
Well, you know, this is like some kind of like, you know, open the window, it's stuffy in here with all this comedy talk, but you know, I'll just say it like, it's cool when the host will let you roll with what you do, like Lewis Black, like the fact that they brought him in continuously to do that, to do his character, because he's really just doing himself.
Yeah.
And like, you know, how hilarious that was. Like, that wouldn't fit on any other show, but it rocks there. And like, that's cool. And Comedy Central was really, really, once they kind of, I think, embraced, you know, this thing, they let it rock too. So, I mean, like, you know, that's, you can't ask for more with that.
Do you keep up with the political...
Yeah, but I don't.
You don't care.
I never was a political comic, and I always like, you know, I always think that if you're a political comic, that when you do go to vote, we should all get to see that, you know, because it would suck if you do all these political jokes and then you never vote.
Yeah.
Right. Telling everybody what to think.
Yeah, or like you found out that Bill Maher actually did vote for George Bush. You'd be like, what?
No, but I don't care who you vote for, it's just as long as you vote. That's why this election season, there's going to be, hopefully there'll be lines around the block, like for Star Wars 2 or something, like just continuous lines of good Americans exercising their right to vote, and that should blow away this whole system of, like, you know, I'm older than you guys. Like, voting is like you go to like a smelly library and yeah. you put a ballot in a thing, and then right. a goat kicks you in the ass out the door. It's like it's like barnyard ancient turn of the century.
You got stuff. A goat?
Like, there should be, you know, let's get the boop boop computers going in on this stuff and like make yeah. it easier. But honestly, I think this is going to be like this is it's like an exciting time.
What,
I guess.
What would you do if Trump won?
Well, first of all, I don't really follow it like that.
Yeah.
But I don't politically, you know, care right yeah. now. I'm mm-hmm. for Hillary, I guess you could say. And I know the younger kids are for Bernie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't really know. Like, does that bother you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. People have just been asking me that.
I know. I didn't know that you would hit me with a political thing. Yeah. I said I'm not a political guy. Yeah, yeah.
What are your thoughts on the terrorists?
I'm always curious how much, though, comedians who don't talk politics, because I feel like we're all like enough aware, you know, and that's kind of
yeah,
what
I know.
I'm
but it's kind of like everybody's talking about it now, so it's like, why do I have to throw my chat in there? There's yeah. a lot of great talkers, you mm-hmm. know. It's like, well, what are a few doers?
Yeah, one of my buddies was like, he's like, I straight up am moving. I am fucking moving if he wins. Yeah. I'm like, I
he's gonna move out of his mom's basement. That's what he's gonna do. He's gonna have to get a job. No, I'm gonna say it like, you know. It's going to be very interesting, the vote. It really is. Yeah. Have you ever had any troubles voting?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean,
because I bet you you're everybody's story at the voting booth. I'm going to say it right now. You'll never believe who is he voting for. Santa?
David Sell, you might be the only guy that has more midget jokes than me.
I love, first of all, when you and I are on the stage, oh, yeah. I love it. I love
Haven't you guys like done
well, that's something that, like, you don't yeah. see much out here, but back east we do it a lot. Like, me and Jeff Ross and all that kind of stuff, we bring up another guy and, like,
yeah.
you know, we roll it together.
Yeah, you would bring me, we've done it at the store here, we've done it at the Comedy Cellar, where you would be nice enough to do your time, but then bring me on stage at the end, and we just...
I love that part.
It's
best.
So much fun, because it's so unpredictable. We don't know where we're going to go.
It's like reverse improv. It's like everyone's disagreeing at the same time, and the crowd doesn't know what to do. I also like, you know, Jeff is also like a master of timing and like the roast sure. master and everything. So when Jeff and I'm with Jeff and we bring up, like, you know, he roasts someone from the crowd and mm-hmm. like sometimes how brutally funny that is. And yeah. like, you know, I take the side. I'm like I'm like for the roastie, and Jeff is like slamming it down. It's a lot of fun. The fun of comedy. Like, I know, like, yeah. you know, just the whole like unpredictable
yeah.
shit. You know, I think the crowd digs it too.
Well, because at that point, we haven't practiced anything.
Yeah, no,
we're not a loyal and hearty. Yeah, like we're not going on stage doing a who's on first thing. And I think the audience can appreciate that too, knowing that they're seeing something that no one else is seeing.
Right.
Like, this is an individual moment for them in that moment.
Well, what sucks is, like, after you do it a while, it becomes like you say this, I say that.
Yeah.
And that's when I get like a little bored with it. I like it when it's more like rough and, like, you know, just like no one knows who's going to talk next, that kind of stuff.
What were your experiences with dwarves before you met Brad?
No, actually, I've had some great experiences yeah. with I call them the Littles, and, you know, I think you great should be represented name. More at the Oscars. No one talked about that.
Right?
No.
Come on, man.
You
like, everyone's
jumped
talking
up
about
and, like,
yeah.
ran up on
you
stage
should have actually.
Why Oscar's so white. I can start the hashtag.
So tall.
Yeah, right. Oscar's so tall. Fuck that.
There you go.
Yeah,
now, another great t-shirt. We're getting great ideas out of this.
If you had bum rush the Oscars wearing an About Last Night podcast t-shirt, that would have been the greatest.
That would
ever.
Be really good.
What are they going to do? Kick you off? That's illegal.
Well, yeah.
What are they going to shoo you off with a broom? They can't do that.
Yeah, I can say that that's my handicap seat, or like my make-a-wish was to storm the Oscars.
You couldn't have been more awkward than Stacey Dash was.
I didn't see it. I really didn't see it, but I like that they pushed it. You know?
Yeah.
I like that they
yeah.
Would you ever host? You've hosted that.
You guys have a wrong perception of where I am in show business. I'm really at the bottom run of it. I'm really like,
so.
Like, if there was a Battle of the Network Stars, like, I would have to like pull a lot of strings to get on that. You know, like some kind of weird, you know, like,
it's like you remember J.J. Walker.
You remember this guy. You remember that guy.
Oh, I disagree.
I'm really kind of not there anymore.
Well, I mean,
retired.
You have hosted the Porn Awards twice.
I've done that, and I would say one thing that, like, the porn show I did, Dave's Old Porn, that mm-hmm. is like a retrospective on me, but that was one of the best things that I've done, because that really
say.
Was like a great, it was a great, like, look to it. It was like something that, you know, like the retro old tapes, and then getting the stars in for the tribute. I thought it was like one of the first times I really yeah. connected everything together. And I was really happy that I wasn't on the street, like, you know, 4 a.m. and it's raining on me and I'm trying to find fun people to talk to. I thought it was great to be inside and do a show like where I get to control the funny a little bit more.
You definitely seemed in your element in that show.
Yeah, and
it was fun.
The fact that you would be watching. Was it ever awkward to watch a video of a 22-year-old Christy Canyon while the current Christy Canyon is standing like right behind you? Is that weird? Like, oh, how
that's
that
one of the best
feel?
Episodes, Christy Canyon, Mark Maron, where they both had. You know, like a Met in the 80s here at the Improv. Like, he was a doorman, and like, you know, she used to come here, and that was really cool. Where I felt like, oh, that's great casting by me. That I, you know, like, blah, 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 blah. And then she was really as well spoken, like, she knows, like, super smart and intelligent. So he was like giving us great insight. And, you know, Mark also, like, he doesn't really do the porn thing. He's not that guy. So him getting out of his, like, comfort zone was a lot of fun, too. So, I love Mark. He's another guy that, like, I know for years. So it was great to just get to sit with him and just put each other down, basically.
And watch cum shots together.
Yeah, I mean, like, but that was another show where, like, I think, you know, it really rocked out best when the women were on it watching the porn, because that's something that, you know, I think now women talk more about porn than before, but getting Amy on there and Chelsea Handler and Kathy Griffin and Margaret Cho.
Whitney Cummings, too, right?
Whitney, So we got a lot of cool, like, perspectives on that show. But it was a lot of work, and it also was really expensive.
How so?
It was like, because we only got a certain amount of money, and then I had to throw in the rest. Because I, you know, I'm pretty like fanatical when I start doing something. Like, I really get like, you know, just the blinders on.
Yeah.
And I think that's how you have to be, especially on a low budget thing, where you have to kind of like be the guy who like, you know, steps up. And I ended up spending like a couple hundred grand on my own money, you know, at least 100, you know. And it was one of those things where it's like, I'm definitely going to do it, you know. Yeah. But my editor, who I said before, like, was the guy who really kind of like, totally, like, you know, made that look the way it did. It just, like, great. Like, you know, we kept it moving. And
Was there a comic you remember being on the show that maybe had never seen a certain amount of the porn, or
there was
a great moment where it was like eye opening, or they were nobody got offended?
There were some people who didn't want to do it because they're not into porn,
right?
And then there was some people who were way too into it. No, like, Norton was one of my favorites, and also Artie Lang, who's a really good friend of mine. Both of those guys, like, it's just great getting their perspective on stuff. And you know, just so many great lines. You know, we had like what was it, like an hour show or half hour show, whatever it was. It was it was like one of those things where, like, oh my god, there's so many great lines. Well, how do we choose?
How has porn changed?
Has it changed? I don't know, like, the porn that I watch now, because I stopped watching porn when I turned 50, like, just for, like, just to see if I could stop. That's the first time the guy looking at the, he's like, what? And, you know, honestly, then I started again. It was like smoking, where it's like, you know, I tried to, like, you know.
Slowly.
Had a rubber band around my hand, you know, doing all the smoking and bouncing a tennis ball. And then I started again. Because I was like, you know, man, I'm really like, you know, I'm never going to stop watching porn. I guess this is it.
That's got to be a sweet moment to reconnect with your dick like
that. Well, when you did, it was almost like, you know, starting a car on a cold day. It really was like, boom, boom, and then bang, bang. It really came out.
You're like, thank God this thing still works.
Oh, yeah. But hey, guys, I'm going to say, not to end on a sad shot, but...
No.
So what's next for you guys? Are you going to take this on the road? Because I like the rapport going here. You guys have a good chemistry, as we say.
Thank you. Yeah, we're doing a couple of live dates, and we're talking to clubs, trying to be able to do a live. Like, if we do a Thursday through Sunday run of shows, and we get there and do, like, a Wednesday podcast or a Thursday podcast.
If I'm in town and you're doing a live one, let me come. I want to be on it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Love that.
We would love to have
you. The last one, it ended with Brad running on stage dressed as Sia, the dancer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the singer. Yeah, doing my own version of her song. And I was wearing a leotard, and I think that was a memorable moment for everyone in the audience that night.
Leotard or unitard? Which way do you? Who are you voting for?
You know what? I don't like that. Like, it was a leotard, but I really feel like I identify myself as a unitard.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I think, before we wrap up here, that you're talking about how you missed the boat on all the exotic locations with the travel show with Insomniac. Yeah. I think revisiting Insomniac and going to Brazil and all the famous places.
No, I went to Brazil, but, like, I wanted to go to the places that, like, you know, like Vice goes to. Like, I really wanted to go. Like, we wanted to do – we did a USO thing in Germany, but, like, on my USO tours, I went to Afghanistan and Iraq, and I've done, like, 5 of those. And, like, let me tell you something. Like, it would have been really cool for the troops if we had been able to do that stuff. And like that was
Insomniac,
the kind of exotic
North
travel.
Korea.
Yeah, I wanted to do like that kind of stuff.
Oh man!
And you know, we just never could get like the clearance or the whole thing going on now. Because I feel like that would have been really like the great thing. You know, that would have been the coolest. Like, you know, do you guys have fun? And then, you know.
Well, on one of my USO tours, I caught a couple having sex in the theater. So yeah, they
got a couple.
Yeah, they.
I mean, troops. The troops.
Yeah. Right. They find ways to have fun. That's for sure.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Where was it?
This was in Oman.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, and
so that's like the Connecticut of the Middle East. It's just rich. They don't really fight. I was getting laughs on just like, oh, where are you guys? That's like West Virginia. Don't even bring that up. But it's really hard to do a USO tour because they also have their standards. Like
yes,
I used to do, you know. Like, you know, like the whatever joke that, you know, the troops want to hear. But and it was always like the colonel was like, I'm cool with it. But like, you know, we got like this, like, you know,
and this general who's not here.
Yeah.
If
like,
he hears
they
about
don't know.
It,
and
off.
This might offend this person. Yeah. So I felt bad for them. But then when you get it like out in the FOBs, you know, the forward
operating base,
then you could
yeah.
do like whatever you wanted.
Those are great because there's like 9 people at that entire base.
But I also would be followed, like, you know, talk about being bumped. It would be like, oh, you don't know. The Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders are here, and they're going to be doing this thing. And then we got, like...
You can't beat that.
You know, we got an actual NASCAR track that we flew in. We're going to have guys doing hot laps. You don't mind if they do that?
Do a quick 30.
Yeah. All right, whatever.
I also did one where they have, like, you know, because it's a NATO base, where they have, mm-hmm. like, people from Australia, and they have people from all these other countries come by. And because Anna Kournikova was on the show.
Oh, my
so
God.
Beautiful and really cool to, like, do these shows, you know?
Right.
She was a patriot. She wanted to get back to... What's that?
She did stand-up?
Tight five.
No. Ooh. She just wanted to, like, give back to the, you know, like, you know,
she just wanted to
thank America.
Yeah.
Thank America.
Something to jerk off to.
Good for her.
And, like, every troop was there. Like, I think even some of the, like, Taliban were online. They wanted a picture. Because she was, like, you know, signing all the pictures.
They were hoping to see Pete Sampras.
But yeah, they'd be like, who are you? Yeah. Like, to me, like, who are you? I'm like, I could care less. You know, I'm like, she's right over here and whatever. And it was just so funny to see, like, you know, like, everybody is lonely and horny and, like, just wants to break up the monotony of the, you know, horrible situation.
I did a USO tour that had the Pussycat Dolls on it.
Oh, cool.
And that was something where it was like, wow.
That's really cool.
No one cares about the midget.
Yeah.
That's the only time.
The only time that's ever happened.
What Trump's midget? Pussycat dolls.
Pussycat dolls.
What about like Kid Rock, who did so many of these tours? Like, that must have been a rocking tour because he is a great act. And like, you know, the fact that like they would get somebody like that. Definitely that's if you as a comic or whatever get a chance to do that kind of thing, you should do it.
Yeah,
like,
I haven't
really
yet.
It's like one of the few things I'm really proud of.
Well, and you've done so much work for them, and you've been a champion for a couple of their charities. While we're wrapping up, I want to make sure we mention them. Was a Purple something? There was
the Operation Purple, which is for to raise money for the summer camps for the children of the men and women who were deployed. That's a really good one. And you know, I've done stuff for the Wounded Warrior, and also the USO, which few people know this. The USO. That takes donations that they need.
Yeah.
They need money. It's not a government thing. They need money to put on these shows, and they do more than just the shows. They set up like you know, like for people to like cameras for people to read stories for their children.
Right.
You know, so that the kids have a bedtime story.
The most mind-opening thing that ever happened to me on one of these tours when I was in one of these forward operating bases, and I said. And they showed me my bed, and it didn't have a pillow on it. Yeah. I was like, "Hey, can I get a pillow? Is that cool?" And they looked at me and said, "They said yeah." But then that guy, and they pointed to a soldier and said, "He doesn't get a pillow."
Oh,
I was
wow.
like, "Oh fuck, okay."
You're like, "Oh, I'm sorry about that, but could I just still really quick just get
well,
a?"
I mean, don't get me wrong, I still got the pillow because hey, this is you know.
Yeah, yeah.
What did the locals think of you? That's what I want to know. Like, did you run into any locals? Like,
yeah, in a
like the Haji shops or something like that.
Bahrain, we did a couple of local shows. That was they didn't laugh so much as they just stood there with their mouth agape, like. How is this happening?
How is this talking? Is that what you're about to say?
How is this talking?
Did they scream, "The legend is true"? There will be a. There will be
6 more months of summer.
Yeah, you should have like ran over and like you know I am your master.
Well, there was one time when I ran after a group of guys that were kind of making fun of me, and I started
locals or our guys
locals.
Okay,
and like. Well, because one of them said I was a demon.
Oh, really?
And yeah. So then, I ran after him, like going like that, and then they started just booking it, and then like I had two Marine escorts, and they were the best because they wanted to have fun too.
Yeah.
So they see me start running off, and then they yell out, "He's loose! He's loose!" And like everyone starts like panicking, like I'm not a fucking velociraptor.
That's something in that when they take you on tour, they have guys watch you to make sure that like you're safe and all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's weird because like you know I'm up in the middle of the night chain smoking, you know, looking for a place for coffee.
Right.
And they're like you know okay you know like. Whatever it would be like, you know, boxcar is moving. And I'm like, what? Oh, you're boxcar. Okay.
What?
The other guy, you know, Tonto. You're Falcon, he's Snowman. You're this, whatever. I'm like, okay. Because that's their job. They have to watch you. And then, like, sometimes I would, like, because I'm really, like, I don't sleep. So I would, like, wake them. And I'd be like, I got to be really careful because I look like their nightmare.
You
know?
So you wake them, like, hello?
Yeah, yeah. Take the K-bar knife out of my mouth. And like,
how did David Tell die?
Yeah. Well, friendly fire, everybody.
Well, thank you not only for doing that,
guys,
for soldiers,
you're great.
But thank you so much for doing this podcast.
No, this is awesome. Yeah, you guys are always. You're too good to me. Thank you.
Well, you're our you know one of our idols, man. So this is like a treat. And I know it's weird for you to hear that, and you know whatever, but.
Thank you. I don't know what to say, but hey, to the fans listening, you got to check out these guys live, and I've seen them both, and they rock it. And you know, for me, when's this going to air?
Monday.
We'll be out of business by then. You can catch me managing a 7-Eleven somewhere in Anaheim.
So go see David Tell at Long Island 7-Eleven near you.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or AboutLastNightPodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.